Welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Times podcast series. My name is Ian Murphy. My guests today are Charlie Thompson, Vice President for Northern Europe and Middle East at Appian, and Satya Srinivasan, Vice President of Solutions Consulting at Appian. Charlie and Satya, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Ian, my name's Charlie Thompson. I lead Appian across Northern Europe and the Middle East.
I'm Satya Srinivasan. I'm based out of London with Appian for 11 years, and I manage the partner solution consulting for Appian globally.
Low-code's now firmly established itself in the enterprise. It's allowing users to automate some of the mundane tasks that they face every day. How does it move from automating tasks for one user to being an automation driver across the entire business?
Low-code, the way it's been defined and it's been understood by the industry, dictates how people start using that. Most of the industry today sees low-code as just a box that automates. And that usually just automate a single person's desktop. What we had in the 1980s as macros, that's literally been polished to make it sound like a low-code. But what really is needed in this industry is to see how we can use the power of low-code, which for me is nothing more than empowering the business to be able to deliver things faster across the enterprise. It starts with how do you perceive your business solution? That's where people are looking into end-to-end full stack, or what we call complete automation, which uses both automating repetitive stuff, which is what we have the low code being really successful at, but also looking into things that are end-to-end where humans are also involved. How can we make life easier? How can we make life faster? When we put these two things together, the concept of enterprise low-code really comes into play. The word enterprise literally signifies bringing the power of enterprise work that humans do, combining it with complexities that automated systems can do and putting them together to deliver something a lot faster. And that's where we can really see the word low-code or enterprise low-code, as I said earlier, bringing a lot of benefits across the entire department or the entire organization for that matter.
It's a good question. It rolls back quite a long way, actually. There's a number of drivers here as to why change is happening, but specifically to the mundane tasks, automating it for one user and now many, it comes back to when their customers call in, they see an entire business. They're not calling in to get one job done by one agent, one person. They want satisfaction across all areas of the business. And if that agent isn't able to retrieve all the data to satisfy any question that the customer might have, then they get frustrated and they're leaving them. People are demanding a higher level of service than that. The advantage of an enterprise low-code tool as opposed to a siloed low-code tool or a short point-to-point solution is that you're enabling that worker to connect to all processes and all data so that they can take on any question and satisfy any customer challenge that they've got. They just can't afford to say, let me pass you around, let me move you. Can I wait till I get this? Customers are demanding a much higher level of service than that at the moment.
But that challenge with automation, if you take six people in a call center doing a job, they will all do things slightly differently. They'll have a different way they navigate a screen. They'll have a different way they do tasks. When they automate this, the way they perceive what they do will also differ. As we're getting people to do the automation, and we want to roll that out wider, do we run a risk of ending up with little bits of automation per user, or how do we combine that to create a more seamless, a more fluid, and a more maintainable set of automation tools?
That depends very much on what you're trying to automate. The customers that we are working with see two sorts of automation. There's the back-end, non-differentiated automation, where you just need to get things done faster and more accurately. And that requires a level of automation. But then how you're going to satisfy your customers, and that also requires a level of automation. But that's where you may be different. So if you're closing your books at the end of the month, you want to automate as many of those tasks to get that done as quickly as possible. Can you allow people to do that? Not always, not usually in a governance framework or something that needs to be as precise as closing books or a regulatory affair. You can't allow too much variation in the process. When a client wants to onboard somebody, they want to make that experience unique. A good low-code solution will allow you to build out the core processes so that it's reusable, but allow some flexibility in there for different sorts of customer, different geographies, different wants and needs of the various agents. It doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all solution, which is why we see a lot of customers moving off products that tell them how to do something, and they're configuring a solution from the ground up on how they want to do it, particularly in the areas where they want to differentiate and offer a different level of service.
It's impossible to put a standard set of instruction for everybody in a company to follow. The reason why companies are successful is every agent have their own way of doing things that makes them efficient, that makes them unique, and that makes them be very effective in how they do things, both in the good way as well as sometimes not so much in the good way. Everyone wants to do their business at the best possible way, in the most efficient way, in the most modern way, in the way they want to do it. If you are going to enforce them to say, these are the 20 systems you need to update in this particular order, they might find it sometimes complex, they might sometimes find it difficult and challenging. The concept of bringing a universal way of defining customizable, uniquely definable microbusiness applications that adapts to each and every agent, but still keeping the entire business process in place, the business data in place, combining the modern technologies, for example, AI and RPA, that helps them do things a lot faster, is what really we see in the industry, bringing huge amount of speed, reducing errors, for example, that might happen when you type in multiple amount of times, and also streamlining the way they work. Today, when you pick up modern apps, there's no training. You pick it up and you use it naturally. We believe that bringing that into business will make business work a lot more streamlined. And let the machines do the back-end job. What does a human need to do? If they are able to do that by using all the modern technologies, including low-code, in order to design these things, let the system take care of how things flow down the chain, but keep the human efficient and effective as possible. That's where I think the entire industry is moving towards, and that's where we should focus on.
Automation gets a bad name. Automation has typically been synonymous with headcount reduction. Can we make ourselves more efficient, therefore can we lose heads? I'm not seeing a lot of that in the industry anymore. I'm seeing automation as, can we make ourselves better? Can our agents actually spend more time actually talking to the person, listening to the person, rather than trying to buy time because the computer's slow, because they can't retrieve the data, because they're having to swivel chair to log into another system? People are measuring the time to serve a customer, but not in the same way to reduce. But is that quality time with the customer? Am I listening? Have I got the data available? Do I know this customer from first log on, pulling up the customer's data? Have I got immediately accurate data? Can I make the right decisions? Can I offer them the right support? Can I satisfy that customer? Not a case of, can I get the customer off the line quicker? Automation is to ensure that they do have that, we used to call it the 360-degree view of the customer. It's never been my favorite expression. But can we put all this together and that one agent make that customer feel valued and serve them properly? Not a case of, can I switch between systems, get them off the line as quickly as possible and move on to the next one. Automation can be a good thing here and a good thing for their customers, not actually a threat to the agents.
Before lockdown, I was starting to hear that changing conversation. That automation wasn't about getting rid of people, it was about getting rid of the mundane stuff that was occupying most of their time and stopping them adding value to the business. As we move forward with people going back to offices and we come out of lockdown and businesses look to grow again, how many people will still carry that message, or whether we'll see a regression to where we were about 2-3 years ago?
Personally, I don't think so. I think this has institutionalized quite a lot of change in flexibility of working, agent remote access, accessing the data from where you are, not having to go to the data, different working patterns, supporting the customers in hours that they want to be supported in, because you can operate at wider time zones when your workers are more remote. There is a general move to an understanding of how this is, and a little bit analogous to the automation here. People will go into the offices when they want to go in the offices, when they need to be in the offices, but they won't just be there all the time. Automation will facilitate changed and improved working patterns, more efficient working patterns, more enjoyable working patterns. And there's a good feeling that that will only bring benefits to both the customer and the supplier.
How do we make this more responsive? If I go back to the early 2000s, there were telcos who were talking about this complete view of the customer, When the customer rings up with a problem, I want to know, do they pay any other people's accounts? What is this customer's value to me by me upsetting them? How much of business do I lose from other people? They were trying to pull together huge amounts of information on a screen, but it became very difficult to understand. If we look at where we've gone with automation since, we've tried to speed up the way that a call center agent would do their job. But we're still not being predictive. There's still an intelligence gap between being able to look at how they work and what they need. Are we getting closer to solving that? And more importantly, what is it that yourselves bring to that particular problem?
We are already in forefront of addressing this particular problem. We have a lot of customers who have data spread across multiple systems. I'll give an example. We have one of the biggest insurance in UK. They have 92 customer databases. They're a 300-year-old company. They have acquired over the years. And they have 30 to 40 customer journeys. When I call them, they need to decide based on the product which systems they need to make changes to. The reason for that is exactly as you said, data is all over the place, but they are not able to have a consistent view on what to do with the data. They can put a process on top of it, which means process becomes a first-class citizen, data becomes a second-class citizen. They can create a CRM view, which becomes data as a first-class citizen, process as a second-class citizen. They can bring collaboration inside, where people becomes first-class citizen and data and process become second-class citizen. This is the fundamental problem that we see, where most technologies out there treat one or two of these two as first-class citizen, the other one ends up as a second-class citizen. We at Appian have redesigned to treat people, process, and data, all three of them as first-class citizen. What we tend to do is, instead of doing massive MDM projects, we try to use the data that is already there and present it in such a way where, let's take an agent as an example here, gets to see what they want to see in that particular screen with the ability to customize so they can make the most informed decision. But that alone is not enough. As you said, pumping huge amount of data on a screen is literally going to be inundating. And by the time I go through the data, the customer is going to get frustrated. We are using complementing technologies like AI, where AI can crunch huge amount of data and present this agent with just enough information that gives them the confidence to make that informed decision. I don't need to show them, for example, 20,000 rows. All I need to do is, I've gone through those rows, the probability of one of these three happening is X percentage. Now, based on that, make your best call. I'm actually helping the agent crunch the data. I've taken the mundane job of crunching the data and given them an executive summary. They just need to spend that extra 5 seconds to go through that and decide what is the most probable outcome of their decision or the conversation. This approach is totally changing the way customers start seeing their own data. The agents starting using their own data to make decisions. And that's where we are seeing the goalposts moving towards exploring your own data to make the best informed decision, rather than just load a lot of data and let the person make their own choice. It's very inefficient. It is going to be most productive. We have a lot of customers who are using this approach today.
I'm reminded, as you're talking there, of one of the conversations I had with IBM early on when Watson was working with medical data. It was very concerned that people would think that Watson was making clinical decisions. It spent a lot of time saying that what Watson's doing is looking through all the data it's got and giving probabilities of diagnoses, but then leaving that to the clinician. You're saying the same thing here, that what we need to think about is not having it be the answer, but more it's driving options for sales agents and people in that position.
It depends on what data we are dealing with. If it is medical data, if it is concerning some immediate impact on a larger scale, a human and things like that, I'm never going to leave everything for AI to do the job for me. Even though I have like Alexa at home, I'm never going to trust it to do everything. There is something I can feel comfortable with. For example, I can ask it to turn the lights on and off at home. I can ask it to play the music because it avoids me from getting up and clicking a switch or playing a music player. The same analogy applies on a larger macro scale as well. If you are dealing with medical data, if the data is very sensitive, if the business does not have the appetite to take all the risk and put it onto an AI, then you might not want to take that approach. You might still want to use AI to help you analyze the data. It all depends on how you analyze the data. You can ask the AI to analyze and give you the top 3% of the spread between the data and what I'm looking for. Or you can say, this is what is in my data. I'll summarize it for you, but I don't know any more than that. You need to make the next decision. There are various ways in which we can design the algorithms for the AI or the machine learning. If it is insurance call center, I can use AI to look into the data from my past exchange with this customer to tell me what's the most likely reason this person is going to call. Now, if I make a mistake on that and say, hey, you had a complaint 2 days back, I'm assuming you're calling me regarding that. And if the person is actually calling to have a new plan with me, it's not the end of the world. It all depends on the risk appetite of how you utilize the AI. And I'm very particular about that. Versus where AI can speed up and make the conversation more easier, more friendly, and more succinct rather than having the customer wait for a long time in order to get what they're looking for.
How do you integrate bots with that AI design? Because it seems what we have here is a multi-phase environment. We've got the human at one end. There'll be a set of potential tasks they could make, data they've got to get, data that's got to be sorted, decisions that have got to be made that the bots can go off and get from an AI or a machine learning or a set of databases at the back end and then return it. But that's quite a complex set of processes for people to build. How do you begin to define the actions, begin to enable the bots to actually speed things up, but at the same time, keep that final decision making with the human and evolve the processes, which is the bit that's often missing in the RPA conversation?
That is very true. When I speak to people, they say that, how can I have bots and AI working together? My take is they don't. They both have clear delineation. Bots do certain things, AI do certain things. They are totally, in my honest opinion, different. However, when you define a bot, you can use certain aspect of AI for the bot to do certain things. There's an element where the two can work together, but the common statement like bots and AI are just one bundle is not something I see as an acceptable term in my own head. Let me tell you why. Bots are ideal to do what you ask them to do. And of course, they do it faster. Some people say you teach it to do something faster, it's going to do it. If you teach them something that you do bad faster, it's going to do the bad things faster. On the other hand, AIs are literally crunching huge amount of data and giving you either a score or a list of values. Using that, you decide what you want to do. But you still need to put a rule on top of it, whether the rule is executed by a human or a machine, to decide what do I want to do with that. If it says there's a 98 probability that it'll rain, I need to decide whether I am going to go out or I'm going to take a brolly or I'm going to sit at home. The AI is not going to do any more than that. A bot, on the other hand, is going to be, tell me what you want to do. There's clear delineation between the two. Where we want the two to work together is when you look into organizations, we have a lot of processes in place, then you can have humans, bots, and AI working together. Where a human is really looking into a screen where they need to analyze the data as they are talking to customers, and the data is so much of variation that you can't map every one of them. But complementing what they are trying to do, AI is going to help them saying, hey, this is the likelihood, this is the percentage. And then they make a decision and then move the process forward. As the process moves forward, one of the requirements might be to read or write data to various systems in the background. It makes no sense for a human to then copy and paste the data by logging into 10 different systems in the background. That's an ideal use case for a bot. If you don't have bots and you have direct integration, that is even more efficient. But we are still using a lot of legacy green screen systems that customers are clinging on to. The knowledge for using those systems are actually diminishing. You can use a bot to do the job for them. New people don't need to learn 20 different systems. They just need to learn one system, and the system, bots, integration do most of the job in the background. This is how I see humans working and leveraging the power of both bots as well as AI that are there out there.
I'd like to roll your question back a long, long way, actually, and that's ask a bit about why the change. Why are you putting AI and bots together? I'm not saying you can or you can't. I'm just saying, that the fact is, if you automate a bad process, it's just a faster bad process. One of the strengths of low code is in the way that the solutions are configured. And that involves working with your teams to ask them how they want to run a process, how you should run a process. Configuring that process, it's a two-way street, because as we explain the functionality in the platform, people realize there's another way of doing it. And as they realize there's another way of doing it, they then simplify their process. We can then automate that, and it keeps moving forward. A lot of people concentrate on the speed of delivery of a low-code platform. You can deliver really, really fast, many, many times faster than traditional code methods. Real power in low-code, and particularly a low-code like Appian, where the solution stays in low-code. It's not a compiler. It stays in low-code. It means that you can continually improve solutions. Most of the clients I speak to need continuous improvement and innovation. I'd say, above all else, they're the two drivers that people are looking for. As and when they go about digital transformation, it's not so much that they digitally transform at the point of the transformation. It provides a platform for continual improvement and innovation from then on. You're not stuck with that process. You can initially consume a spreadsheet, but then you might send a bot to do this, and then you can put it there. You might see the data coming this way and then say, actually, we can smarten it up with AI. You're not fixed with that first system design, wait a long time for it to come out, and then go through an extensive change process. It's a really iterative design process. You configure it, you show them, you make some changes, you deploy that, you can keep configuring, keep going through that improvement cycle in short, sharp sprints, and people see the solution being built out in front of them. That makes it much, much more powerful, because just because you did something away, it doesn't mean that you have to carry that on, but also just because you can do something, it doesn't mean you have to incorporate it. Whilst digital transformation is incredibly powerful, it is only a change. And a CIO of a global logistics and shipping company spoke to me last week. He said, the bit that's often forgotten is that digital transformation is still transformation. And a digital transformation project is probably 70% transformation and 30% digital. It is the smaller component of it. You've got to get everything else right to make that work and then build a platform to allow you to continually improve and to have innovation off that, the back of it. I completely agree with everything Shathya said, but I'd roll back one and say, well, why are you doing that? Is that the right thing to do? Do we need to do that at this stage? Let's get things out. We're not going for big solutions, big change. We're starting with minimum viable products. We're socializing it when we're continually improving the solution.
People are inherently bad at spotting repetitive behavior that they do. One of the advantages potentially that an AI has is that an AI can assist in helping you understand what can be turned into a bot task. It can look at what you do. It can monitor what you do and say, hey, that's repetitive behavior. That is something you do 20 times a day. That is something that happens only after you've done that there. It can help build or help guide you towards areas where perhaps we can put bots in place. Are we mature enough yet to use those systems to assist us? Or is there a risk that people will see that as being too intrusive on what they see as being the human element of a job?
There's always a balance here. On many occasions, yeah, that can be a real aid to the system design and the way it happens. It would be different in different areas. If you were to run the bot in the call center, the bot wouldn't see all the notes that are being written into scrappy bits of paper and then chucked in the bin. It would miss a vital part of that task. If it was in the back end, then yes, it might pick up a lot of the other bits and macros and other areas that are being written, other tasks that definitely could be automated. One client I work with looked at their approvals process and realizing that in a 20 string approvals, everybody was always approving. They honed it down and went through a sampling task and then looked at it. And this was bot driven sort of analysis that, well, actually, if that's happening, why are we doing it? And it's a repetitive task. Is there any point in doing it? Is there another way of doing that? And that was a bot-driven observation. Like most of these things, have to bring all of these areas together if you want to get a fully rounded solution.
That transformation phase is not a one-off. It's a continuous process. How much continuous evolution do you see in bots?
Bots are evolving every day. The way they are evolving is they are trying to take more and more of not just repetitive work, but there's a gray area where bots and AI work together. You talked about earlier something where an AI can identify what are the pockets where things are being done in a repetitive way or things like that. there is progress where there are attempts for bots to see if they can learn and make the changes without a human even being involved. I'm not sure if we are there yet. Maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, there might be some progress in this field. But there's tiny improvement every time you look into how people are using bots. Bots evolution is how do people come up with creative way of using bots? Not just, hey, copy and paste it 20 times, but can I do more than that? Can I do image recognition? If the image is like this, so on and so forth. That's where I see the bot evolution play. Now, the interesting thing over here is when we look into the concept of bot evolution, does it add value and encroach on what it should do? How much confidence do we have in what it is doing is the right thing to do? Are we confident enough to say, hey, bot, take the learning and do it automatically? Do it and let's show me. I still have the final button to push to say, yes, that is right or wrong in order to move it forward. That is going to be a million-dollar question in time to come. That's where we are seeing the people trying to come up with creative way of using the bots that I call as bot evolution.
I suppose that also depends what the bot is doing. If the bot is going out to the back end for me and just grabbing data and bringing it back, do I need to ask the bot to show me all the steps you took? Would I understand all the steps that it took when it did that? But if I'm trying to teach the bot to do something more complex, then yes, there will be that trust phase. Do I trust it getting there? When you talk to customers, how far down that line are they to understanding what RPA can deliver today, how they're using RPA, what they can get from RPA, and is there a maturity curve you're seeing develop?
One of the things we've definitely noted that RPA bots without an overarching application, without an overarching workflow, deliver a very limited ROI. Going back to Sathya saying how Appian can bring together people, process and data, if you actually change people to workforce, you actually then split into a digital workforce and a human workforce. Bots are just one part of that workforce that does a job. It does a good job, and they can do repetitive tasks for you. But unless they're combined to the wider process and the data with a known purpose, as in why are they doing that? And that's the purpose of the overall workflow, to enable the customer to do this, to enable your internal process to achieve this or that, then it's always very limited. It's always disjointed, and the ROI is always very limited. The ability to bring any of your workforce, be it digital or human, in combination with the process and the data in one place is absolutely vital to maximize your ROI.
To add to that, we try to look into an organization as a whole. This is going back to your very first question. What is the overall challenge that the organization is facing? What is the overall goal and objective for them moving forward into the world of digital transformation? What tools do they need in order to achieve their goal? In doing so, in having this discussion, we soon realized that both AI and RPA just plays one part of the overall picture. They need a lot of other things too. They need to have a better way of, as you said, integrating the data, defining rules, defining a process for their business for that matter, identifying and managing case and data. When you put all those things together, RPA and bot just become a part of that equation. Now, humans by default are imperfect, and that's our biggest advantage. If you start a project greenfield today, absolutely from ground up, using the latest technology, working with the business, you probably won't have any need to use bots at all, because you are going to design a system that has no efficiency challenges. You're going to talk to your team to identify what's the best thing they need to do. So that's a beautiful, perfect system you're going to create. But human being imperfect, in 6 months to a year's time, there will be areas or pockets where you will identify efficiency that you can gain, the repetitive stuff that will creep in some place or the other. And that's where you will introduce, once you identify, you'll introduce a mechanism to optimize it. In a realistic world, introducing a bot to complete the repetitive work is a tactical solution. You need to identify why that is happening and fix it or change your entire process to make it more efficient. So that's how you can have a utopia of a good software or a good platform design. But it's impossible to come up with large scale change like that. And that's when these kind of stuff creep in. You identify pocket for optimization, you see RPA as a way to fix it, all the way from 1984. So when I use mail merge, I have a file that has all the email address, I have a file that has the document. I call the mail merge, it calls a macro and then puts the email address for me on my document is ready. It's the same concept that's going to go again and again. The next generation is going to have even more efficient process. Yes, you might have ways to identify the pockets of inefficiency. You might even have systems that will automatically identify and fix these pockets or tell you that, hey, there's no point in doing this. I will take care of it. But as a human, there will always be areas where you can be efficient in one way or the other. That's the reality. That's what I see happening. It's not essential to have a bot, but at some point we have to fix inefficiency. Today we call it as bot. Yesterday it was macro. Tomorrow it might be something else.
But all this comes back to something I mentioned earlier. If we think about processes, processes differ between what's written down and what the user does. If we look at software development over the last 5-10 years, software development has outstripped processes. We might have started out writing a piece of software to meet a process that a company has, but actually now that software itself has become the process, and it's no longer necessarily directly related to what we think is the process. The same becomes true of workflow, to go to your comment, Charlie. What one person sees as being the workflow may be very different to the person sat next to them or somebody else in a similar department in a different company. How do we build the intelligence in to be able to spot what is working, to spot the commonalities, to enable us to identify what can easily be turned into a bot and what requires a little bit more effort to be turned into a bot and what can't be turned into a bot because it requires a higher level of thinking?
Before I go to the technical, or Satya goes to the technical, there's a human element to this. We frequently turn up to start the journey, start the configuration of an application for a client, and they realize only at that point that they've got multiple processes for the same way of doing the one thing. They didn't know that until we've got them in the room and ask, okay, how do we do this? We're looking to put sticky notes out and ask them how they do it. And somebody says, well, I've never done it that way. And customers don't know what they don't know. They don't know that different people do it. And they do have to harmonize it. And projects are delivered well when they send somebody empowered to make a decision, say, okay, I think this is the best way of doing it and let's do it. First of all, the crude filter is you have to get the company to agree how they want to do their process, how they want to service their customers, how they want to close their books, how they want to manage risk, and agree on a process because it is going to be configured. Difference between Appian as a low-code platform and buying a product off the shelf is that if you buy a product off the shelf, to know your process, you have to read the manual. Whereas we write the manual when we build the solution. We ask them, how do you want this process to go? In the same way that Satya said earlier, you know, there should be no handbook at the end because this codifies the way they want to do something. It massively reduces the training bill and then no need to have a handbook that people refer to, you know, where they are in the process and what the next step is. However, once you have started getting a solution going, this was a nice development between just plain BPM and iBPM. Is that it is aware of itself. You can now look at the metrics of what's going down, how much is going down, how long it's taking from this point to that point. You can put in challenger and champion processes to say, is there a better way of looking at this? What if we trial this group of customers through this process or this set of agents do this? And you should be looking for the continual improvement. You should be looking for the system to tell you where it can improve. You should be listening on a feedback loop for your agents to telling you where it can improve. It's all there to be heard, whether it's sourced from the system, bots, or people. That you need that continual improvement in your processes.
Having been a programmer myself, I know the challenge over here. You get a bunch of requirements handed over to you, and then you start coding. The requirements, by the time you finish coding, has totally changed, and then there's a disparity between what the business thought they wanted versus what is being delivered. This is one of the biggest challenges we are having for a very long time. There are steps in which you can address it. One of the ways is to bring parity. Parity between what the business wants versus what is being built versus what is being run and what is being monitored. You need to have parity on all of them. The way to do that is a single seamless way within a platform. How do business usually capture the requirement? Either a flowchart or flow diagram or something like that. But that is a good enough candidate. Using low code today can be translated directly into something that can be designed and executed as well and monitored. This addresses one part of your question, which is what business is giving. You have certain degree of confidence to say that is what is being built and that is what is being executed. Because it is visual in nature, you can literally see what is happening in your process. You can follow the lines to say what has happened, what has changed, what was entered, what was not. And when you do make changes, you can see, okay, in the older version, it looked like this. In the newer version, it's like that. Humans are a lot efficient in visually identifying changes rather than a bunch of code and bunch of syntax and things like that. The second one, which is once you do those things, how do you identify pockets where things can be efficient? This is where either a product itself can do, or you can have a lot of products out there that take data dump from the way you do things. And we talked about AIs, but there are other products that do that too. Within Appian, you can have everything viewed in a nice linear way. It can see how long it took you to do something, how long you were doing it for, how long it was on your basket before you picked it up, all those kind of variations. This is ideal candidate for you to put an analysis or a report on to say, okay, this is the breakdown. This is how it is happening. And this is one step where I'm constantly breaching the SLA. That gives you telltale signs to identify, okay, so I'm breaching SLA 80% of this time. Let me identify why. Because no matter what you do, the why part is something that a human needs to get involved in order to identify. Why is not going to be derived by a system that easily. Once you identify the why, then it gives you the second step of what can I do about it. We break it down or introduce new elements like RPA to improve the throughputs or any such combination. I believe that you can have a sequence of steps in order to identify pockets of efficiencies, put things in place to make them better. But I don't think we are in a situation where there's one golden or a silver bullet that says, okay, just plug this in and everything is automatically going to change. By taking these measured steps, you also get visibility into how your business is actually doing. Sometimes you don't need RPA. Sometimes you just need a human to be nudged and said, hey, you're missing it out. Do you have a problem? A human-to-human conversation is all it's needed. Those are the ideal ways in which to convert process and workflows and codes and then bring them together to be more linear and more harmonic in place.
This is normally the point on the podcast where I ask people for three things that they would say to a room full of people who were not sure whether they should be going for bots or low code or anything else. So, who wants to go first with their three things?
I'll give it a go. The first thing I would say is look for opportunities where you have people, process, and data in your organization working harmoniously. The second thing is when they look into a digital transformation, look into the macro view of your entire business, not just one pocket or one department or one person. By looking into the macro view, you are going to end up seeing the holistic view of all the various ways in which you can make your process better. And you can also learn your process every time, because no matter how much you implement, it keeps changing. It's like a living organism. It keeps changing every 6 months, every 9 months. You get to know how things, by default, you might automatically identify that one way somebody is doing a job is actually more efficient than how you have defined. The third one is, whenever you do decide on a technology, put it to its pace. Put it to its pace and see how the technology is not just going to address your problem today, but also 6 months, 2 years, and 5 years down the lane. When a technology is really good today, but it is static, that technology is going to be outdated by the time you implement. Whereas a vendor or a technology that is constantly innovative, that is constantly moving ahead with the curve, I keep saying IT is one business where you need to keep running to be in the same place. As long as the technology that you're adhering to or you're trying to use is also running ahead with you, then you're always going to be one step ahead rather than one step behind. Those are the three things I would actually tell customers to look out for.
The three areas that I would ask them to consider, not very specific to the bots argument, would be really be absolutely crystal clear about what you're trying to achieve. Where is the measurable business value? If you can't prove it to yourself, there's a lot of vanity projects, there's a lot of nice to do's. but they must be absolutely crystal clear on the measurable business value that they're going to achieve and how they're doing it. And that must be the guiding light throughout the project. The second would be that they should think big, but start small. You must release benefits quickly. That builds confidence in the team, the transformation, the program. Otherwise, everybody's interested at the start, but if it's going to take a year, everybody just drops off. You should be releasing benefits, releasing functionality every 8 to 10 weeks, and then get into a cycle of releasing it every month. That keeps confidence high, the benefits being released. The third is never forget that this is about bringing together people, process, and data, and it is a transformation. The people have to transform as well. You can put in an Appian solution, and we are absolutely sure that it will bring huge automation benefits, but it won't move the chairs. I always challenge a CIO when I'm talking to them. I can almost guarantee that Appian will never be on the critical path in the transformation. No availability of Appian or our ability to change will impact their ability to get it out. They will move slower than we can configure the solution that will deliver the benefits.
I had the benefit last January of talking with a commercial debt collection company. And one of the things they'd done was, through the use of bots and RPA and other bits and pieces, they'd reduced the amount of people they needed to sort through the complexity of different commercial invoices. But what they'd also done was they then kept those people and that knowledge in the company by moving them to other locations, which created more business for them because they were able to keep the knowledge and the learning in the business. That actually generated more business for them down the line. I'd like to think that a lot of companies going forward are going to be that far thinking.
Agreed. And delivering enhanced customer service because the agent's actually able to focus on what they're trying to do and not just getting the data to have the conversation.
Thank you both very much for talking with me.
Ian, thank you for your time. It's been very interesting.
Thank you, Ian. Have a good day.